Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from Canto 7, Chapter 4, Text Number 13. Tam Anga Matam Madunori, not, excuse me, Madunoru Gandina Vivritta Tamraksham Asesha Jisnya Pa Upasatopayana Panibir Vina Tribis Tapo Yoga Balaujasam Padam Tam Anga Matamadunoru Gandina Tam Anga Matamadunoru Gandina Vivritta Tam Raksham Asesha Disyapa Upasato Payana Pani Birvina Tribhistapo Yoga Balauja Sampadam Tam Angamatam Madunoru Gandina Vivritta Tam Raksham Asesha Disyapa Upasato Payana Pani Birvina Tribhistapo Yoga Balauja Sampadam Tam Angamatam Madunoru Gandina Vivritta Tam Raksham Asesha Disyapa Upasato Payana Pani Birvina Tribhistapo Yoga Balauja Sampadam Tam Angamatam Madunoru Gandina Vivritta Tam Raksham Asesha Dasyapa Upasato Payana Pani Birvina Tribhistapo Yoga Balauja Sampadam Matajis. Tam Angamatam Madunoru Gandina Vivritta Tam Raksham Asesha Disnyapaha Upasato payana pani birvina. Tribhistapo yoga balauja sampadam. Tam him Hiranyakashipu. Anga, O dear king. Matam, intoxicated. Maduna, by wine. Urugandina, strong smelling. Vivrita, rolling. Tamra Aksham, having eyes like copper. Ashesha Disyapa, the principal men of all the, the principal men of all planets. Upasita, worshipped. Upayana, full with paraphernalia. Panibhi, by their own hands. Vina, without. Tribhi, the three principal deities. Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. Tapaha, of austerity. Yoga, mystic power. Bala, bodily strength. Ojasam, and power of the senses. Padam, the abode. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O my dear king, Hiranyakashipu was always drunk on strong-smelling wines and liquors, and therefore his coppery eyes were always rolling. Nonetheless, because he had powerfully executed great austerities in mystic yoga, although he was abominable, all but the three principal demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, personally worshipped him to please him by bringing him various presentations with their own hands. Please repeat, O my dear king, Hiranyakashipu was always drunk on strong-smelling wines and liquors, and therefore his coppery eyes were always rolling. Nonetheless, because he had powerfully executed great austerities in mystic yoga, although he was abominable, all but the three principal demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, personally worshipped him to please him by bringing him various presentations with their own hands. Purport. In the Skanda Purana, there is this description. Upayanam dadu sarve vina devan Hiranyaka. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful that everyone but the three principal demigods, namely Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, engaged in his service. Madhavacharya says, Aditya Vaishnavo Rudrasribidha Isura Yataha. There are three kinds of demigods, the Adityas, the Vashus, and the Rudras, beneath whom are the other demigods, like the Maruts and the Sadyas. Marutas Chaiva Vishve Cha Sadyas Chaiva Cha Tadgataha. Therefore, all the demigods are called Tri Pishtapa, and the same word Tri applies to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. Om Agyanat Mirandasya Gananjana Shalaka Chakshu Umilitam Janatas Mai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Vachakalpa Truvyasya Kripasana Vaivata Paritana Pavani Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I apologize with my voice. It's not cooperating today. So, we're continuing here reading about Hiranyakashipu and how he's terrorizing the universe. And throughout the last several, maybe weeks, we've been hearing so many different descriptions of his atrocities along with his austerities. And the purpose of his austerities, we know that his real purpose was to actually gain power to control the universe. And we're seeing here that by his austerity, he was capable of accomplishing that feat. And we heard so many examples of that also being applicable to modern society. There's so many people, demons, non-devotees, who are very strong in wanting to become powerful and very famous for their self-aggrandizement, and so that they can control and abuse so many living entities. So this particular pastime is beneficial for all of us. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Namam duskritina mudha papajante naradama mayaya pitta jnana asuram bhavam asritaha. Krishna says that in the material world, the grossly foolish, the lowest of mankind, so the grossly foolish and lowest of mankind. And then he also says that those whose knowledge is stolen by illusion and those who partake of atheistic activities of demons never surrender unto him. So this story is very applicable in the description of what Krishna is speaking about in the Bhagavad Gita. But Hiranyakashipu is classified as the greatest demons. And as we heard from Devamrita Maharaj, we're thinking, well, we're not that bad. But this story is actually very instructive because it tells us of the struggle between the atheist and the theist. This is going on since time immemorial. And there's no relief from it, whether one goes to the upper planetary system or to the lower planetary systems. This struggle for the theist and the atheist is continually existing. And this story is eternally true because this struggle, it's applicable in any particular age. And if a person becomes God conscious in any capacity, he'll find enemies because the world is just full of demons. No matter where we look, there's so many people that are innocent, but then there's so many that are very demoniac. And we see that even when Krishna was on his planet, he also had to kill so many demons. Even his own maternal uncle, Kamsa, wanted to kill Krishna. So Krishna even had to fight and he had to kill so many demons. But no one can actually kill God, no matter who they are. No one can kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the godless society, they want to kill him. But instead, Krishna kills them by the law of nature. Just like we see Hiranyakashipu, although he was very powerful by his austerities, he was able to accomplish a very wonderful feat by controlling the universe and how it functioned. He was able to control the weather. If he decided that it should be sunshine today, he was capable of demanding sunshine. Or if he wanted rain, he was able to control that. But unfortunately for him, regardless of his austerity and his accomplishments, still death comes. And that's actually the law of nature. Mrityu sarvaharascham. Krishna says that he comes as death. So all these non-devotees, demoniac personalities, they're accomplishing so many feats, but ultimately Krishna, he kills them by this time factor, this death. So the materialists, Their idea is that they'll live forever. This is what they're trying to accomplish, even today. We see the scientists and philosophers and materialists, they're very tricky. They're actually very clever. And they make us think that at any given time, they'll find the knowledge of how to exist for eternality. We even see that the foolish people, I forget the name of the isn't there some group that when you die, you can get your head chopped off and they'll freeze it? And the purpose of that is that they believe that sometime in the future, they'll figure out how to have the body live for hundreds of years. And if they figure that out, then they figure that they can put their head back on some body, and that way they'll live again. And there's a society, and sometimes people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to be able to do this. And although we're thinking, wow, this is like completely crazy, still it's going on. People actually are so foolish that they'll pay hundreds and thousands of dollars. So people are so much involved in desiring this sense gratification that they'll go to any extreme means of acquiring this enjoyment. As we see that Hiranyakashipu, he went to the extreme measure of allowing his body to be completely eaten away by ants. And his austerities were so severe, it must have caused a tremendous amount of pain. So this is a very instructive story in terms of our own life. We ourselves, we go through so many great austerities to acquire a little bit of sense gratification. This is the nature of all of us in this material world. We're here not because of pious activity. We're here due to our intense desire for gratification and our desire to become rulers, to somehow or other become independent and controllers. And this is the reason we're here. If we have a body, the body's here, and we've got a certain type of body because we wanted this type of body. We wanted what we have due to our activities, our functions. And we see that in Kali Yuga, there's so many advantages, of course, but there's so many disadvantages. In Kali Yuga, all of us, we're very short-lived. Hardly. I'm sitting here, you know, at my age, and at my particular age, anything can happen. And it does happen. So we have short lives. When you think about it, sitting here, maybe you can live 20 more years. So if you think about 20 years, how fast is 20 years? Practically in no time, 20 years will come and go. And that may be the maximum amount of time I may have. Or maybe 10 years, maximum. So in Kali Yuga, we're short-lived. Although we have the opportunity to live 100, we know that when someone lives to be 100 years old, what suffering there is. How much suffering can there be in that body? So many aches and pains, can't get up, harassed by so many tribulations on a daily basis. So even if you live to be 100, what kind of life is that? What quality of life is there? Another aspect of Kali Yuga is that we're very quarrelsome. We love to quarrel. If we can quarrel, then we're very, we're somewhat satisfied. But that's one symptom of Kali Yuga, to argue, to quarrel. We're very lazy. We're lazy for spiritual life, but we're not lazy for trying to develop some type of sense gratification. We're very eager. We'll do whatever it takes in order to acquire a little bit of sense enjoyment. We're so overcome by the modes of nature that even though we realize that these activities are temporary and they'll give us no real lasting pleasure or happiness, still we'll endeavor, over-endeavor for enjoyment. But at the same time, we'll be very lazy for the execution of our spiritual life. This is Kali Yuga. And we see in our old life how lazy we can be. That we are so lazy that even if we make vows that we'll serve the spiritual master, still we're so lazy, overcome by the modes of nature, that we won't be able to maintain. And this is Kali Yuga. Another thing in Kali Yuga is that we're very misguided. We're so easy to become misguided. We can hear so many instructions from a saintly person, and we can hear that guidance and instruction. But at any moment, we can become misguided. All we have to do is hear something from one person. Did you hear this? And immediately we become attracted. No, I didn't hear it. Could you tell me about it? Wow. I knew it. I knew it. I knew that was going on. I just had a feeling it was going on. So we're misguided so easily. Why? Because we're so lazy in the execution of our Krishna consciousness that someone can come along and misguide us in a moment. We can become misguided by someone's power, by their power, their wealth, their looks. We can become misguided by their sweet tongue. We can become misguided so easy due to our lack of execution of our Krishna consciousness. And another thing is we're always unlucky. There's so many songs in the material world that they sing about how unlucky one is. They even have a very famous song when I was living in the material world. Born under a bad star. Unlucky. So many people are born under a bad star. And they experience so many unlucky situations that it's almost like sad. How is it that someone can become so unlucky? But this is Kali Yuga. This is a symptom of Kali Yuga. Very unlucky. Our only luck is if we happen to somehow stumble upon a devotee of the Lord. And by that association, we might be able to get out of this unlucky situation. But above all, in Kali Yuga, we're always disturbed. But why are we disturbed? We're disturbed because we're lazy. We're disturbed because we're misguided. We're disturbed because we're quarrelsome. We're disturbed because we're short-lived. It's like if you're sitting here and you're thinking you only have a few years to live, will you be happy? No. Very disturbed. If somehow tomorrow you found out you had some terminal disease, it would be very disturbed, very unhappy. We'd feel very cheated. You know, oh, this isn't fair. How is it that I got this? I didn't deserve this. But maybe we do deserve it. Maybe we do deserve it by our activities. And we work so diligently to execute our desires for sense gratification in the material world. But really, here, this story of Hiranyakashipu, he acquired so much vast power. But what was his downfall? His downfall was his committing offense at the lotus feet of a pure devotee, his own son, Prahlad Maharaj. And this is something that we should all be very concerned about in the execution of Krishna consciousness, that yes, we might have acquired some power in Krishna consciousness by our austerities, by the chanting of the holy name, by founding regulative principles, by execution of devotional service. We may have acquired some power, but at any moment that can be taken away at the just by making offense at the pure devotee of the Lord. Vaishnava aparad. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered this very seriously, and he considered it to be a mad elephant offense. Just like if there's a mad elephant that's allowed to roam freely in a garden, at any moment he'll rip up everything. everything in his sight, in his capacity, complete havoc. And this is how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu identified Vaishnava Parad. So we ourselves should be very careful, because this story is instructive of that. Hiranyakashipu was very powerful. And he was so powerful that he was able to even control the demigods, it says here. And that's how powerful he was. Can you imagine how powerful we are compared to Hiranyakashipu? Practically nothing. Like a little straw. So one of the instructions here is to be very careful in the association of devotees. Because we can also commit this mad elephant offense, this Vaishnava Parad, very easily. And we may be very good at the execution of our Krishna consciousness, but all it takes is this inattentiveness and commit a Vaishnava Parad. And that Vaishnava Parad is very easily, it can be done very easily. And we mentioned that we have so many disqualifications in Kali Yuga that, my gosh, it's like any moment we can commit this atrocity. Just by our laziness, we can commit it. By being misguided. It's what an atrocity to hear a god brother, a god sister, that would criticize Srila Prabhupada, or think that Srila Prabhupada is not a pure devotee, or to think that Srila Prabhupada didn't give us everything to help us go back home, back to Godhead. What an atrocity. What an offense. A Vaishnava Parad. And that individual, their future is very bleak, very dark. So here, Hiranyakashipu, very powerful person. So powerful that we can't even conceive. But all it took was a Vaishnava Parad, and his whole life was gone. Whatever austerities he performed was immediately vanquished. And this is the material world. If we become too much attracted just to commit or perform austerities just for the sake of the body or the mind, it's temporary. This austerity that we perform to acquire, to get ahead, to get this little bit here, a little bit there, all this is such a waste. It's a waste of energy and a waste of time and a waste of our life. And it's so dangerous, because becoming too much attracted to these things can take us away from the path of execution of our Krishna conscious life. It's so easy that it's so subtle that we don't even realize that it's happening. We're thinking, well, no, I need this much. I need this. Well, I got to do this because I need this. But then what a chance that is that we're taking. Just think of the gamble. We're gambling. The chance that we take in order just to satisfy some whim or some mental speculation. And we put our Krishna consciousness on the line by this activity. So we ourselves, we should be very careful and take this as a very instructive story in terms of how we execute our Krishna consciousness. And we should see that if we execute our service very nicely and our sadhana, then we'll always be protected. We'll always feel very scared of the material energy. Prabhupada said that, didn't he make some comment one time that you Westerners, you're not scared enough of this maya, this illusion. We think that we can control this energy, but it's obviously false. Prakite kriyamana nigunai karmani sarvasya hankara vimudhatma karta hamiti manyate. We think that we're the doers, but in actuality, we're being tossed around by the three modes of material nature. And, we see here Hiranyakashipu, very powerful soul, but obviously he didn't have what it takes to go back to Godhead by his austerity. So we ourselves should be very careful not to perform austerities just for our body, our mind, and think that that's going to be the proper, maybe at the time of death, Krishna will be merciful to me and take me back to Godhead. No, that's not guaranteed. Absolutely not guaranteed. Yes, we need to maintain our body and our minds and everything. But if we execute our Krishna consciousness properly, all those items will be sufficiently taken care of. And yes, sometimes we have to go out and take a job and work to do that. That's okay. There's no difficulty with that. But the difficulty comes that when we do that, we get attracted by the material energy and we want more and more and more. Just like Hiranyakashipu, he wanted more and more. He wasn't satisfied. But if we sincerely endeavor in our Krishna conscious life, even if we have to do that kind of work and that kind of service to maintain our family, we'll be able to be satisfied with the simple necessities of life and not become over enamored by the material energy and want more and more and more, because this is also a part of this pastime that Hiranyakashipu was never happy, never satisfied. He always wanted more, felt he never had enough, to the point where he even wanted to kill his own son. That's a horrific situation. What's that? Kalir Dosha Nihe Rajan Asti Heko Mahangana Kirtanadiva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Rajet. This is our only salvation. That salvation is to chant the holy name properly. It's the only thing left in Kali Yuga. Nothing else. The holy name. This is the only thing that's left. And by the chanting of that holy name, we become freed from bondage. And that bondage is very severe, very difficult to overcome. And it says that if we chant that holy name, we can tie the knots, cut the knots of material energy, and we can become promoted to the spiritual world by this chanting of the holy name. Okay, I think my voice is about done. All right. Anybody having a question or a comment? Yes. Well, the reason he did this is because Lord Brahma was the supreme being of this material world. And he allowed Brahma to execute his service. Although Lord Vishnu was well aware of Hiranyakashipu. And he knew that regardless of Hiranyakashipu getting all those benedictions, that it would not be long before he would be killed. Because Lord Vishnu knew that he would commit offense to his pure devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. So it's the idea is that Lord Vishnu allowed Lord Brahma as a supreme living entity in this material world to execute his service. So he allowed this to go on. Krishna and Vishnu allowed it to go on. And at a certain point, when all the demigods, including Lord Brahma, became exasperated, they couldn't take it anymore, they approached Lord Vishnu to take action. And then Lord Vishnu took action. So it was allowed. Just like in the material world, there's so many atrocities going on. It's not like Krishna doesn't know. But he knows that eventually these living entities will all die. And they may die in mass. Like there may be a horrific, tornado or tsunami, and so many people will be killed. So Krishna doesn't have to come down personally to take care of this kind of business, but he did in this case because Hiranyakashipu was such a big demon and he committed a mad elephant offense at the lotus feet of a pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj. So he came, and also at the request of the demigods. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. I have a question in regards to what you were saying about we have to be very careful against Vaishnava offenses and aparads. It can happen at any moment. And I'm a bit concerned for a lot of us, we live in this community which is very diverse in the sense that we have some very senior devotees, there's always some new persons around, and we're trying very hard not to become at least speaking on behalf of more junior devotees, we're trying not to be familiar in the association of so many senior devotees who are very experienced, who have done such important service. And so I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit about that, how to protect against familiarity, specifically in a situation where there might be a senior devotee who likes to act, you know, very congenially and in a friendly manner with someone who's quite junior to him or her. How should that junior devotee reciprocate with the same reverence that's expected, or also in a congenial and friendly manner?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say what you mean by that. I mean, I can't understand it totally, but congenial, I mean, yes, there can be friendly relationships, but at the same time, there has to be some type of Vaishnava etiquette, even on both sides. Senior devotee, if one is senior devotee and is more advanced, that position should be that we should pick up the junior devotee in their Krishna consciousness. So being congenial doesn't mean that we can talk prajalpa and say that that's Krishna consciousness. It should be that our conversations should be focused on service to Krishna, to the pure devotee of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada. We all should be trying to accomplish so many wonderful things to please Prabhupada's movement. So if there's a senior devotee and you're conversing with a junior devotee and talking about rock and roll or some movies or so many other maybe crazy things, that is not really helping. That's not a congenial conversation. But if it's talking about, oh, how we can, in a congenial way, you're discussing how to become more dedicated and steady in devotional service, or how we can improve our learning of the Shastra, that can also be spoken in a congenial way. And in that way, it's beneficial. But if it's prajalpa, neither one is being helped by this, the senior devotee or the junior devotee. And yes, if that kind of language is being used, then obviously the junior devotee will eventually lose respect for the senior devotee. So both parties have to be very cautious, and especially the senior devotee, so that they don't create a misunderstanding of what the real purpose of us being here. I think that a good word that I have heard many times from Suradas is that this Krishna consciousness is not a fraternity. You know, like if you belong to a fraternity, you know, there's all walks of life, but everybody's very much interested in their own, you know, self-aggrandizement. And so we should be very cautious not to make Krishna consciousness a fraternity and speak to anyone we want at any time we want in any fashion that we like. That is not good. And as far as the junior devotees are concerned, if there's such a conversation going on, maybe not to be overreactive on it. Maybe they should just listen, and then after the conversation is finished, in the future, try to avoid talking that way with that individual. Maybe in the future, not that all of a sudden you try to chastise, and that wouldn't be so good. Like if a senior devotee says something and you might say, wow, you're really in Maya today, you know, I'm not so sure that would be a good idea. I think maybe you should just be respectful, and respectful to this person. Maybe you don't know all the circumstances, maybe you don't know why they're doing it, but be respectful. But then in the future, try to avoid such conversation. Try to avoid it.
Thank you very much, Prabhu, for your nice analogy and examples in your class. I think I have a comment that you touch very excellent points, and especially in regards to offenses. And that reminds me of in the past time of King Raghuna and Jat Bharat. At one point he said, I'm not afraid of the thunderbolt of Lord Indra. I'm not afraid of the punishment of Yamaraj. I'm not afraid of the scorching fire, cold winds. But what I'm afraid is to offend a Vaishnava devotee.
Yeah.
So this is a very interesting topic, because even within the name of devotional service, and we have seen devotees very enthusiastically, apparently sometimes, they do tremendous things like distributing so many books, opening many temples, and even having so many disciples at one time. But unfortunately, because they were not very careful and not very mature, something on the way happened, and we analyzed that most of the time was offenses. Because I'm doing this much, what are you doing? I'm doing this, what are you doing? It's like it makes you feel like, oops. So my point is that, yes, any service that we're carrying on here is by the mercy of the Guru and the devotees of Srila Prabhupada, who faithfully are following this process. And if we do it very respectfully and very humble, with humility, then anything can be solved, any problem can be solved. Because ultimately we're seeing, you know, that if at one point you've been mistreated, or you think that you've been exploited, or you think you've been not cared properly or unfairly being cared, eventually if you just remain humble in your service, Krishna will deal with those things. And it's unfortunately, we don't want that to happen. But we're seeing when someone, a senior devotee, is doing something wrong, if you just remember the Trinarapi Sunichena, yeah, and just carry on with your service, and then eventually that person, you know, because of those offenses, something, yeah, happened. So yes, the point is that, yes, we have to be very careful. You know, I've been analyzing this very much every, yes, day, almost thinking about this, that any success that we can achieve is how you deal in a day-by-day basis. It doesn't matter how many books, how many temples, how many disciples, how many things you're doing. I want to see your attitude, your behavior in a day-by-day basis. And then you show me you're a senior devotee. I'm not with a challenge mood, but I'm just saying, then you can judge. And then you can see yourself. But you always feel yourself like you're the most humble. You don't know anything. I don't know anything. Only Krishna knows, Prabhupada knows. I'm just carrying on my service. And then we probably have some...
Very good point. I think an extension of that also would be to see that this isn't something that should be just based on the bodily platform of life in terms of man or woman. Because there's a lot of women in Krishna consciousness that have done a tremendous amount of service for Srila Prabhupada in the early days and even today. So we should not see, just because it's a man can do this, a man can do that, women are this. It shouldn't be like that. It should be according to the service that one has actually accomplished. There are women in this movement, this temple, that have accomplished more than many, many, many men within our society. And they've done it because they're very dedicated to the mission of Krishna consciousness to serve Srila Prabhupada. And if we've been here any time whatsoever, you know that you cannot do service in Krishna consciousness unless you are really determined and you're focused and you're fully surrendered. It doesn't matter. You can be here for 3, 4, 5, 6 months and you understand that. Can you imagine if someone's been doing this for nearly 40 years? What kind of austerity have they performed? And just imagine if you're a devotee here for 1 year, 2 years, if you're 5 years, 6 years, it doesn't matter whether you're man or woman. Can you imagine the austerity that it takes to get up every day for 40 years, chant your japa, and accomplish some service? And you're right, it doesn't matter whether it's big or small. But just to get up and do it without faltering, without fail, for 40 years. And then what to speak if someone has accomplished something very big? You know, what to speak of that? What has that individual done in order to be empowered? Because Krishna consciousness is about empowerment. It's not an accident. We shouldn't think that if somebody is doing some great service that it was an accident or they got all the breaks. Oh, she did really big because she's got a lot of breaks. That's ridiculous. That's called bodily platform of life, mental speculation. Whatever happens in Krishna consciousness is not an accident. It's actually empowerment. And that empowerment comes from the desire, the sincere desire of the devotee, of a devotee praying to Krishna, to the spiritual master, to please give them the strength to execute their service without faltering. It's not easy. You have to pray every day. So try to do that for 40 years, 50 years, and then really accomplish something. That's the point. You know, there's so many people that chant Hare Krishna, but how many have really accomplished something special? You know, something special, something that's noteworthy, that's helped Srila Prabhupada's society. We see sometimes if somebody comes along and they give us, you know, in 1 year they may give us $5,000 and we go, wow, Haribo, thank you, Ki Jai. But what about a devotee that's been doing that for 40 years and doing that like on a monthly basis, a weekly basis? What do we do to that devotee? Oh, who? Who are they? What's their name? Oh. But we remember that person that gives $5,000 in 1 year, one time. Oh, yeah, such and such. Great. Wow, what a great person. Woo, big time. Then what about that individual that gives it for 40 years? And we don't even know their name. And sometimes we don't even know what they do. This is amazing. We don't even know what they do and what kind of austerities they perform to execute it. This is sad. This is a sad state of affairs. So we should be very humble and meek, as you say, and very. But we should also be understanding as to what someone is doing in the execution of their service and how hard it is, how difficult it is. I can say that. I've been here 40 years in Krishna consciousness, and I can tell you how difficult it is. It's extremely difficult. But then it's easy, too. Because all you have to do is just follow the process and not speculate and deviate. Just follow the program. Don't mentally speculate. And you'll be empowered to get up and chant, come to the program. And then you'll be empowered to actually do something wonderful for Srila Prabhupada. He loved wonderful things.
For doing something big for Prabhupada, we need to go out from the association of devotees. Sometimes we can think like that, you know.
We have to do what?
Sometimes in order to get or to do some great service for Prabhupada, to accomplish something big for Srila Prabhupada, we might think that we need to go out of the association of devotees. Sometimes we can think like that. So it can be done in that way. It's something that cannot be done in that way, or how we can work in that situation.
Well, there's Papa gave an example that, you know, you can be like a shooting star or you can be like a drop of water. If you see a shooting star through the sky, it lasts for 2 seconds and then you don't see it. Whereas if you see a drop of water, it's constantly ticking, tick, 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 tick. It's consistent. So the spiritual master is very much interested in your consistency. The spiritual master is not so much concerned about how much money you give him. He's concerned about how steady one is in his execution of Krishna consciousness, like that drop of water. And by that activity itself, you accomplish so much. Just by doing that, just being steady, like a drop of water, tick, 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 tick every day. And then it adds up. Just like if you're not thinking about how many times you've chanted Hare Krishna, but after you sit down for 40 years and start calculating out, you've literally chanted millions of names of Krishna. Just by being steady and just by being dedicated and not thinking about accomplishing huge things. But as you go on in Krishna consciousness, that'll automatically come. So one who's thinking, well, let me go out and I'm going to make $5 million for Krishna and I'm going to give it to Krishna. And that's such a gamble. You gamble your Krishna consciousness for the sake of money. Krishna doesn't need that money. He needs your devotion. He needs your, or he doesn't need it, but he wants it. He wants your devotion and your love. You know, by karma, people like Ambarish Prabhu grew up in a family of Lakshmi. And look, he's taking that Lakshmi and using it to enhance Srila Prabhupada's movement, to spread the message of Lord Chaitanya. And sometimes you can stay in Krishna consciousness and just by executing your service for 30, 40 years, you could probably accomplish that also. Just in Krishna consciousness. There's so many opportunities. Look at someone like Brigapati Prabhu. You know, he was out there distributing books for so many years. He does $50,000, $60,000. Add that up over 30 years. See what that comes up to. This is what he's able to accomplish for Srila Prabhupada's movement. He didn't have to go outside to do that. He did it right here in Krishna consciousness. And so, and we have Tadit here in New Dwarka. By her sincere desire, she was able to give Nukmi Dwarkadish $14 million. Yes. And that's not an exaggeration. $14 million. So let's see, who do you know anyone that has given $14 million to New Dwarka? No. It's an amazing accomplishment. Amazing. And all you have to do is just stay in Krishna consciousness and use your enthusiasm and your brain in Krishna consciousness. And you can get what you want. Why not? But just use your brain and your enthusiasm and Krishna will empower you. Okay, Jai, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.